Hey, this is Ruben, and nobody asked me to do this.
What up, y'all? This is Joe, and nobody asked me to do this.
Film critic, filmmaker, and YouTuber Chris Duckman surprised his 1.9 million subscribers with the video, How I Left the Jehovah's Witnesses to Pursue Filmmaking. On today's episode, we'll discuss his video and delve further into his story. Chris, it's great to have you on the show. To break the ice, we want to ask you a series of questions.
This reminds me of the scene in Kindergarten Cop where Arnold's like, I'm going to ask you a bunch of questions. I would have them answered immediately.
Get the answers now.
Yeah. So, please do.
All right. So settle this shit for us. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
Quick answers. Marvel or DC?
Oh, Jesus Christ. Coming out the gate. I love them both. I'm going to tell you right now. They're both comic books. I love them both.
All right.
I'm sorry. That's a wimp out answer, but I love them both. I really do.
Okay.
Ruben's the DC man. I love Marvel. So
yeah, we were just gonna howl whoever lost that one. Because one of the questions we had was Batman v Superman.
Who wins?
Yeah.
Superman.
Damn,
motherfucker's
Joe.
An alien. God damn it.
What about when Batman cheats?
All right.
All right. Xbox or PlayStation?
I'm a PlayStation guy.
Right on.
Okay. All right.
Super Mario or Sonic?
Mario. Yeah. Although I do love Sonic. I have quite a few Sonic games, but they're over the years, they just kind of got kind of monotonous. There hasn't been like a great, I guess Sonic Mania was good, but that was sort of like a revamping of things that had already existed. But Mario games are consistently great.
Yeah, it's been a while since a good Sonic game.
Yeah.
They just had a Sonic movie. That's it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's like, and you can see that on my YouTube channel. All right, last one. Tupac or Biggie?
Tupac.
What?
Thank you.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
All right, yeah. You pass.
Okay. California Love. My favorite song of his.
On January 11th. 2021, you posted a video called How I Left the Jehovah's Witness to Pursue Filmmaking. And you surprised many of your fans, especially your Jehovah's Witness and former Jehovah's Witness fans.
Yeah.
It was fantastic. And we just want to say thank you for sharing that with everyone. And today, we'd like to further delve into your story and this video by asking questions that lead to conversations.
Sure.
So I was reading some of your reactions you were getting on this video in your comment section. And it was really nice to read like so many positive ones.
Yeah.
There was people who were witnesses, people who were not witnesses that were being very positive.
It's been overwhelming.
I mean, I even saw people who said they dated and married Jehovah's Witnesses and they were sharing some of their experiences.
Yeah, that I can't even imagine that.
Is this the kind of response you expected?
I think, and this is one thing that I'm not sure if every XJW can relate to, but for myself, since being in that faith for as long as I was, just over two decades, created a bit of a guilt complex in me in which I tend to always think I'm doing something wrong, even when I'm not. I tend to think that things that I'm starting, some sort of venture, whether it's business or a writing project or whatever, I always think, oh, well, this is just going to be terrible. So I tend to imagine the worst case scenario and everything and assume that that is what's going to occur. That's a good trait if you want to be a director, because you problem shoot, you troubleshoot, you try to think ahead of time about what could go wrong. But in life, I tend to think, oh, well, this is just going to be a shit show. But I was very surprised that so many people have shown support from the XJW community and from people who have been in other faiths that they felt restricted in, or just people who didn't understand that life, but were just like, hey, man, that's terrible. And I'm glad you made it out.
The retirement video, I understood completely what you were saying, but I knew what you were talking about where your fans thought it was vague. Mm. That was like the perfect opportunity to give a witness, but you didn't. Like, yeah. Why didn't you give a witness in that video?
I didn't want to make the Jehovah's Witnesses look bad, because if I came out in a video and said, hey, I'm closing down my channel and it's because of the Jehovah's Witnesses, it would make them look bad. And I knew that. And I was still tethered to the organization at the time. I still felt like I had to be there. I still felt like I had to impress them, like I had to placate them and make them feel good, you know, and make them think that I was like I had their best interests at heart. And so I didn't know how else to say it other than something I'm doing here is going to harm me or my family and friends, and I'm sorry. And it was very confusing for people at the time. No, I mean, I didn't have 1.8 million subscribers like I do now. I had a few thousand, but there was enough of people to, you know, ask me like, is everything okay? What's the deal here? It wasn't easy.
When I saw that video of you explaining the reason, I felt anxiety because I can imagine how distressing it would have sounded to somebody else that had no idea what you were talking about.
Yeah, it's like if they were in a Jehovah's Witness, it sounded like your family was being threatened, like your family was kidnapped if you didn't stop doing the videos.
Yeah, like Liam Neeson called me and was like, "I'll fucking kill you. You better close down your channel. I'm going to kill you all."
Well, it was kind of like that, right? It's like, you don't know who I am. I'm an elder in your congregation. I have a set of specific scriptures that I have to read to you.
Yes.
Come to the back.
Yes, we're exaggerating, but it did feel very much like there was a force that was against me doing really anything that wasn't preaching, giving talks, reading the Bible. Like, I remember there was a woman in our congregation who was an incredible singer. I mean, amazing, like Adele level.
Wow.
And she's never going to do anything with it ever because they discourage you from being part of the world. I remember there were a few Jehovah's Witness artists, and I think George Benson is one.
Yep. Yes.
Yeah. And, you know, he's a great musician, but I remember always asking my dad, like, why is he allowed to do that? Is there like a reason that he's okay? And my dad would be like, well, he's just playing instrumental music and, you know, he doesn't go to Christmas parties and stuff. And I'm like, okay.
You wanted to be him.
I just wanted to be able to engage in an art form. I didn't think that what I was doing could actually have any negative impact on anybody's life. And when I would find out that random people from other congregations would call the elders at mine and say, you know, we saw that Chris watched this or Chris is wearing this. And I'd be like, you mean it would be like a shirt for a movie that it would have like the movie with the title of the movie on, you know, just a, your basic promotional movie shirt. And they would be like, he's wearing a shirt with a movie on it. And those types of things. And I know for a fact, and this is one thing I didn't really get into in my video. I know for a fact, one of the reasons my congregation was so strict is because into my older teens and early 20s, a special pioneer from Bethel was assigned to be an elder at our congregation. And I remember when the announcement was made that he would be coming, words like correction and new direction were thrown around a lot in that announcement. And the suggestion was our congregation needed to get whipped into shape. And they were sending somebody from Bethel to do that. And as soon as this man arrived, it was sort of like the way I describe it to people is it was sort of like when a general walks into a room and there's lesser ranked soldiers, they click their heels together and salute him, you know. Obviously I'm you know, exaggerating, but that is the feeling that happened when this man arrived. Everyone had a fear of being corrected, of getting in trouble, basically. And he made everything extremely strict.
Did you feel they were trying to groom you to help you spiritually, or did you feel they were trying to catch you doing something bad?
It was both. I was absolutely being groomed to be an elder, as well as all the other younger men in the congregation. And as I responded well, you know, in my early, I should say my mid-teens, I responded well. I got baptized when I was 16. He began to go to me in private and sort of make suggestions to me about how I might be able to help the other younger people in the congregation for, you know, setting an example for them. That setting an example for them was usually like, maybe you shouldn't take them to the movies. Maybe you should take them to certain films, or don't take them to the films at all. Instead of going to a film, why don't you take them out in service and all those types of things. And he was definitely trying to shape me into, you know, a super elder.
What type of Jehovah's Witness would you say you were at that point?
Well, in my mid-teens, I was absolutely there. I was ready. Like, I wanted to be an elder. Got baptized at 16. I was very happy about it. I remember standing in a crowd of people at the circuit assembly, and they would ask those two questions, and everyone just in this monotonous robotic voice responds yes. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you're dipped in the water, and they broadcast it to the people while they eat lunch, and you know, you come out, everybody's smiling and looking at you. And nowadays when I look back on those images, they haunt me. You know, mm-hmm. Like at the time it was very affirming, and now it's haunting when I think about their faces and that robotic voice. So no, I was there. I was ready, man. I wanted to do it 100%.
What was your family dynamic like? Were your parents have privileges?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. My oldest sister was disfellowshipped when I was 12, but everyone else was in. My dad was an elder for a long time. Eventually he wasn't able to do it anymore. And even though he didn't do elder things after that, he still acted like one at home. And so basically, if I didn't at least become like a pioneer ministerial servant elder, it would be a disappointment. It would be like being in a family filled with lawyers and doctors and being like, man, I want to open a Taco Bell. It's like, okay, you know, I'm glad you're making money, but I wish you were doing what we're doing, you know? And it kind of felt like that all the time. It was like this, and you guys know this, they extremely discourage higher education or really anything outside of the basic schooling. And any time that I would ever tell them, hey, I kind of have these goals, these ideas that I'd like to do. And my mom was always very supportive of them. You know, I don't want to make her out to be a villain or anything. She's not, you know, she's been very supportive of me making movies. She always wants to ask me if I have ideas. She'll send me texts and stuff, and she's been cool about it. But I think what my family has been damaged by a lot is silence. I think Jehovah's Witnesses are very encouraged to be silent about things when things are out of hand. And you know this, you know, you go to the elders, you had a problem, you talk to them and they'll solve it. And that's justice. But then yep. you bottle it up, and if it didn't feel just, it's never going to. It's always going to stay bottled up. So when I realized that I had doubts in my early 20s, it became clear to me that I had doubts even before that, but that I had sort of wiped them away, or I had just said, well, that's just my human imperfection. I began to actually do what you're not supposed to do, which is look into the faith's past and actually read about things that they have done, changes they've made. A big problem, though, I must say, is the brother who came down from Bethel, a special pioneer. I firmly believe that when he arrived, he was like a wrecking ball to the young people in our congregation. He just went around and destroyed relationships. Like, for instance, one of my good friends, who I'm still friends with now, he's not there anymore. He was never baptized. He is about a year younger than me, and I had known him since, I don't know, like age 4 or 5, maybe, brother of my best friend. So every time I went over to see my best friend, there's his brother. Love him. You know, let's hang out. Let's have fun. Let's play basketball. Let's play football. Let's, you know, go to a movie. Let's play video games. Let's just play board games and hang out all the fucking time, man. It was great. By the time I was about 19, he was 18, still not baptized. And his meeting attendance wasn't great, shall we say. But he didn't do a goddamn thing wrong, man. He didn't curse. He didn't smoke. He didn't do anything. He was just, any parent would be overjoyed to have a kid like him. And this brother from Bethel takes me into the back room at the end of a meeting. It's just him and I. He doesn't say a prayer. He doesn't read a scripture. He doesn't even turn the fucking lights on. We're in this back room with the door shut and the lights off. And the only light coming in is from the window that leads to the main auditorium. And he says in so many words that he thinks that we'll call him Dave. His name isn't Dave, but we'll call him Dave. He thinks that Dave's meeting attendance is poor, and that by associating with him regularly, I am giving him the benefits of a true servant of Jehovah. So he says, I don't think you should associate with Dave anymore until he gets his meeting attendance back up. And I remember looking at him thinking, he's not baptized, man. Like he's been raised in this organization. He's a good person. And he's my best friend, who is baptized, by the way. That's his brother. So you want me to go over to see my best friend and just pretend like Dave's not there while I'm there? Wow. Like, what the fuck do you want me to do, man? So that was very, very, very strange to me. And he went around and told the other young people in the hall also to not talk to Dave. And so Dave is depressed out of his mind at this point, because literally none of his friends speak to him anymore. And he's wondering what he did wrong, simply because his meeting attendance wasn't great. So my friend comes to me and says, I think I'm losing my brother, you know, spiritually, of course. And I say, yeah, I don't know why we're not talking to him. This is very weird. Because for like a month, I would go to see my best friend and we would literally lock ourselves in his room.
Wow.
So that we couldn't see Dave. And yeah. Dave would just be like on his computer all fucking day.
How old were you when this happened?
I think I was 19. His brother comes to me and is like, I think I'm losing this guy. We need to talk to him. And so for the first time in my life, I defied a ruling, so to speak, from an elder. And I started talking to Dave again. And I got to tell you, Dave was so, so relieved. He was just so happy that anyone was speaking to him. And, you know, he was crying and shit. He didn't know what was going on. And I realized that there really was no scriptural basis for what this elder told me to do, because they never reprimanded me for continuing to talk to Dave. Now, if they had a scriptural basis, like I said, there was no prayer or scripture read at that fucking meeting. So everyone started talking to Dave again. Nothing bad happened. We didn't even get in trouble for that, which confirmed to me that they had no scriptural basis for telling us to isolate our friend. That kind of bullshit is what started my descent into doubting this faith, because I just didn't understand treating people that way. I couldn't understand treating someone I love that way.
It is interesting talking to ex-Jehovah's Witnesses that used to be elders, how half of the shit is made up. Like, it's all bullshit. Like, you go in, you think, yeah, you're going to feel Jehovah's Spirit upon us. And you go in, and it's really just a bunch of men making up shit as they go along. And they don't realize the damage that they do to people.
Yeah. Part of me, I think, like, all these years later, knowing some of the way that that he operated, was that I think he might have been testing us, seeing, like, you know, which younger person would follow direction the best.
It's leadership by fear.
Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 5 young people out of 8 left within a few years of him arriving.
Wow.
And I'm one of the 5.
The way they treated you and the stalking that they were.
Yeah.
That it felt like, I'm like, geez, they stalked him really bad.
Like, my first girlfriend was, quote, worldly. We met through Facebook. And I told her, I was like, I'm still tethered to this place. We had to keep this a secret. And she was like, that's cool. You know, she was very understanding. But that was also a major factor of me realizing that I just don't belong here, was like actually seeing what regular folk live like, you know, and just being like, hey, this is actually not that crazy. This is pretty normal. So,
which is one of the huge reasons why they keep us separated.
Exactly. But this girl and I would from time to time interact very innocently on Facebook in public. Nothing like leaving love notes or hearts or anything. It's just that pretty much any photo I posted for a while, she would like it.
Ooh.
And So I had this JW friend at the time who happened to notice that name popping up a lot on my feed. And he comes to me and he's like, what's with this this girl? And he knew that I had taken a little trip. I had taken a little vacation, my first ever alone vacation as an early 20s guy, okay? And he was like, what did you do on that trip? Because this was a long distance relationship. And he was like, what did you do on that trip? Because I had this whole fucking scheme, man. I took photos of a hotel that I was supposedly staying in. You know, I took photos of this goddamn shitty hotel. You know, I sent them to my parents. Here's the hotel I'm at. No, I was fucking staying with her, man. You know, and this is so my friend comes to me and he's like, what were you really doing on your trip? And this wasn't like a private thing. He had in his room fold out chairs in a circle, like 10 of them. And he and a bunch of our friends.
Hold up, bro. Hold up, bro.
I'm telling you right now, he had a little mini, like a straight up little mini elders meeting planned.
Oh, no.
He tried to make an assembly, like demonstration.
Yeah.
I feel you, because when I was on my way out of the Jehovah's Witnesses, I was messing around with another Jehovah's Witness who went and confessed. This is all before I exited. And I got home one day. In my living room, there was a bunch of Jehovah's Witnesses sitting in chairs. Not in a circle, though. You beat me. You beat me. But they were in a straight row. I got home from work. I'm like, what is everybody doing here? And she was sitting there crying and points the finger at me. It's not fair. It's not fair. And I'm like, whoa, you know, like, yeah, I feel you, bro.
I laugh because I would have been the brother that got the cheers together. He's like, we got to help Chris out, man. Like,
Chris, if, I don't know if you've ever heard any of our episodes because we just started, but was like the.
I was that.
The
my family was the assembly family. Like, it was, that was me. And so I laugh because I'm like, yeah, I can see myself doing that.
How long would you say it took you to realize it was a cult?
2-3 years.
That sounds about normal.
Yeah. Yeah, it took a few years to really strip it away. And it even took until now to actually just finally be like, fuck it, I'm going to talk about it. You know, because I guess for a while I was scared, mostly because I had a large audience. And I realized that talking about it would be like a thing, you know?
Yeah.
And it wasn't like just telling a few hundred people. So, but I mean, like, I fucking feel good, man. I feel really good that I did. I really do.
That's great.
We appreciate it because we need more people like that out there coming out about those experiences that we had.
Before this video, how familiar were you with the ex-Jehovah's Witness community?
Very. I didn't publicly click follow or subscribe to anything. So I watched like Lloyd Evans videos all the time, followed lots of Facebook pages, but not like with my real name. So yeah, I mean, I definitely watched as many my story of leaving the faith videos as I could, just to kind of like understand what people were dealing with. And while many situations were different in what specifically made them leave, the commonality was that almost everyone thought that they were in this position where it was like, this is just happening to me and I'm only making this video because I feel like no one else is going to understand. And it was really nice to see that community of people actually being like, no, I get this, and truly relating to the material and understanding it.
You talk about the consequences of coming out as an apostate. You know, that's the word that they taught us to fear.
Yeah.
Did you prepare for that?
I don't really know if there would be anything I could really do other than to just accept that that will occur and knowing what people will do who are Jehovah's Witnesses. Gratefully, I'm not friends with any, so it doesn't matter.
But, one thing I appreciate about your video is you don't bash the organization. Like, that's what I always tell Ruben. Like, I don't want to bash. I don't want to tell people like to leave the organization, but I want to be able to speak out. And it's crazy that just speaking out about your experience, they will label you that A word.
when it comes to being labeled an apostate, you guys know, I mean, if you read Crisis of Conscience by Raymond Franz, you know that that's more than just making a book or a video or a post that is specifically speaking out about JWs. It could be anything. Like, I have a family member who shared with me, there was one specific aspect, actually two specific aspects of the faith that they did not agree with. They said, I don't agree with the disfellowshipping arrangement, and I don't agree with not being able to celebrate birthdays. And I said, do you know that if you say that out loud, you will be labeled an apostate? Like, it's that easy. All you have to do is say, I'm an 8 out of 10 Jehovah's Witness. That means you're not good enough. You have to believe everything.
What was your experience like finding a circle outside of the Jehovah's Witness?
It wasn't easy at all. I found that the screenings I would go to, the public movie screenings, really helped, because I was able to talk to people who also would like be waiting in line to get into the screening, and they were excited about the movie, and we would talk about that, and I slowly, you know, made new friends and friends that didn't care that I went and saw Thor, and that was cool. And so that definitely helped. And now, like, I would say a major portion of my current best friends kind of sprung from that, seeing movies together, talking about movies, and just hanging out. I realized that I was making friends with people in a way that I just wasn't before. That it wasn't friendship based around a sort of imagined team spirit, where, like, once you leave the team, you're not really part of it anymore. It was actual friendship. And that was the kind of thing that I learned, that I always thought, well, these people are my family. They'll do anything for me. And I remember once it kind of became known in the congregation that I was talking about movies on the internet, these people who I thought were my family were just looking at me like I didn't exist anymore. They would look at me with this sort of ashamed disappointment. They would ask me the same kind of question all the time. Are you doing well? How are you feeling? You know, are you okay? All these very, like, the kind of questions you ask, like, your friend when they just did, like, 8 lines of cocaine. You know?
And like, I'm fine.
Yeah. Yeah. And I realized those people weren't really my family.
Yeah.
And from time to time over the years, a family member will come to me and say, or text me and say, so-and-so asked about you and they love you and they miss you. And I'll be like, stop talking to me about them. If those people love me and miss me, they can call me.
Yep.
I'll answer. I'll talk to them. And I will not tell them that they shouldn't be a Jehovah's Witness. I will just talk to them and like a normal person. But if they genuinely, like you say, love me and miss me, they would call me. They wouldn't just use you guys as a courier to get their information to me.
I figure if you have strong conviction, then open dialogue or open conversation, even if you have differences, shouldn't change your mind. And I think the organization knows that their doctrine is so fragile that, you know, a little pebble can crack it. So, of course, they don't want people to associate.
That's why they have to do things like mark you, like they did to you. What was going through your mind at that time? Did this idea of these people are not my real friends come to you a bit at that time?
Absolutely. It concerned me that there was no need to warn the individual of the talk, to just go about the normal meeting routine and your family's there, and all of a sudden here comes this part. And you're just sitting there and you can feel, it's like your skin gets hot and tingly, and your heart is beating fast, and your stomach is twisting into the knots, because you know that everyone in the room is looking at you. And to get that message from my friend, it was like, oh. Like I said in the video, I can't say it any better, is that knew the guy my whole life, literally like my real brother. He's in 75% of my childhood short films.
Wow.
Made them together all the time. And for him to just leave me a 17-second voicemail, just being like, hey, man, we can't. And we weren't going. We were just going to go to Arby's, man, and just grab like a roast beef sandwich and just fucking just talk. And for him to be like, I can't even do that with you. Goodbye, my brother. That kind of shit. It's inhuman. It's absolutely inhuman. There is nothing compassionate or loving about that arrangement that they teach is both of those things, whatever the fuck you want to call it. It's all meant to bring you eventually closer to God and your friends, and it's healthy for the congregation. It's healthy for you and all that bullshit. It's not healthy for anybody who's homeless, who is not able to talk to people about how they feel sexually or express themselves in any way through art, even. There's nothing healthy about it at all. There's nothing loving about it.
That friend that was so close to you, like a brother, you said that you would make movies together. And I was thinking, oh my God, Chris went on to do something with that.
Yeah.
And where's his friend now?
Yeah. He doesn't even you want to know where he is? He's an elder.
Oh.
Yeah. So he went all in, man. He went all in. More than likely, if they disfellowship me, he will be involved in the decision.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's like a movie.
I'm telling you right now, man, I agree with you. It is a movie. I have written a lot of stuff that has been inspired by this. Now, I haven't written like an actual autobiography script. I've written an autobiography book that I'm still writing, nonfiction book. But when it comes to like ideas that have sprouted from this, absolutely. I have there's a lot of themes that go through a lot of the stuff I've written so far. And it's people who feel trapped or isolated. It's people who feel like they have an obsession that no one else understands. It's people who've lost family members for long periods of time. It's that kind of stuff. And it's been inspired in ways because of this situation. But, you know, I went to this guy a couple years after leaving. I went back to his house and I knocked on his door and I invited him to my wedding. I told him, I said, here's your invitation to my wedding. I told him right then, I was like, we are absolutely positively doing everything we can to make sure there will be nothing offensive to a Jehovah's Witness at this wedding. We had it at a cafe. There was no priest. We had an officiant. We had like a legal officiant marry us. It was not a religious ceremony. There was every single song that we chose for our playlist was like totally radio friendly. We went out of our fucking way because my parents came to the wedding.
Okay. You know, I was going to say, did they actually go?
Yeah.
That's really nice of you, and it's really nice of her. Like,
yeah, it is.
Sounds magnificent. I mean, for her to do that for your parents, so that your parents could be there, she loves you, man, a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, it's obvious to you. I'm just like, wow, that's
stunning. My wife is Jewish. And so, you know, we had talked about doing some of the things that she wanted to do. And we got to a point where we were like, all right, let's just do it. Let's just do a regular sort of legal proceeding. And, you know, I invite my friend to this thing and he didn't even show up. And I'm like, you know what? This is fucking crazy. So I have a little arc for this too. I'm going to share with you. A few years later, I get a text from him inviting me to his first ever public talk. Now for those listening who don't know what a public talk is it's the Sunday talk. It's the big Sunday talk and it's long. Like 35 minutes long. It used to be 45. Back in my day, we had to 45 minutes public talk. Back in my day, we had the book study. Today, they don't know about the book study.
Carts. They're using carts. Get out of here.
What's going on here? Videos, cartoons. That's the devil.
Complaining about letter writing during COVID. I used to do that to get my hours. Anyway, so, you know, he invites me to the public talk. It's this big thing for him. Clearly, I as soon as he texts me this invitation, I think to myself, all right, he's on his way to being an elder. But out of respect for my family, for 1 year, I decided I would go to the memorial. And it was the year after that talk. Now, for those listening who don't know what the memorial is, it's essentially sort of like a you're looking at Jesus' death and the passing bread and wine and stuff. And I was like, fuck it, I'll go. Just because I thought it would make my mom happy. You know, I figured, all right, it's 45 minutes of 1 year. I'm going to hate every second of being there. People are going to hug me. People are going to walk up to me and ask me where I've been. And it's going to be a nightmare. But I'll make my mom happy for this one time. So I decided to do it. And I go there and my friend walks up to me and he says, it's good to see you, my brother. I missed you at my public talk. And I said, I missed you at my wedding. And I just walked away. I was like, fuck it, man. I'm done with this shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like,
it was just that kind of stuff constantly, you know?
And I think what, like, I imagine must have, like, irked you more is that he had there's witnesses or ex-witnesses that get married and they really can't go. They're in a church or they're just fellowshipped. But you're not. You exist in this loophole where Jehovah's Witnesses, you faded away. You're inactive. Yeah. And if they went to your wedding, they wouldn't get in trouble.
Exactly.
Especially the way you did it. Like, you did everything you could to accommodate Jehovah's Witnesses.
And Yep. I felt like I was still trying to please them. And I wanted to tell them the inverse. I was like, imagine the inverse, okay? So I come to your public talk. You know exactly what will happen. Everyone there will walk up to me, hug me, say they've missed me, ask me how I've been, hope they see me come back again, all that stuff. The entirety of the meeting will be for anyone here who's new. There's publications in the back. There's scriptures you can read. It'll be all that kind of stuff constantly. It'll be an absolute assault on trying to make me welcomed again into the fold, so to speak. Now, imagine if my friend had come to my wedding and he walks through the door and everyone at the wedding goes, oh, hey, man, isn't it great being worldly? Hey, you want some wine? Let's get drunk and listen to rap music and be bad. And just that's the inverse, is like he walks in and everyone wants to encourage him to be a non-Jehovah's Witness. But it wouldn't even be like that. Like, you've seen the Australian Royal Commission videos where these elders are on the stage saying, well, that's their choice. They make that choice and we respect that choice. I'm like, no, you don't. This isn't a choice.
Every witness that watched that was like, that is bullshit.
Yes.
Even active witnesses must have said that's baloney, because it's not really a choice, but that's what they'll run to.
Mm-hmm.
It's gaslighting to the max. Like, it's their fault. Well, I mean, you're doing.
I will say, though, like that video of the elder with the mustache when he's being asked about, do you protect those outside of the congregation from child predators when you don't report them to the police? And he just sits there for probably 15 seconds in silence. His brain broke. Like, he actually could not process that. And I actually believe, I wouldn't even be surprised if that elder drove home with doubts, because like, that is some legitimate psychology.
It kind of reminds me of your video, actually, when you were trying to explain why you couldn't do videos anymore.
Exactly.
You're stressing there and you're literally watching that video feeling so anxious because you know what's going on in your head.
It was so weird because I could relate. That was one of the most relatable videos I've watched. I made a post in a group that this was one of the most relatable videos I've watched in a very long time. When seeing you try to explain but not explain that, you know, it was wild. Like, the Jehovah's Witnesses were forcing you to shut down your video, but you can't say that.
Exactly.
One thing you said in there, like, you fell into a deep depression giving up your passion.
Yeah.
Like, you were using your passion to distract you from the depression at that time. Was it that time when you realized that that wasn't your truth? When you realized, like, you being a Jehovah's Witness wasn't your identity?
Yeah, because once those things were taken away, because it wasn't just like, don't do YouTube videos. They were very clear about, like, also the movies you were watching, we don't appreciate those. So it wasn't like, hey, you can watch those movies, just don't talk about them publicly. It was like, also, you probably shouldn't be watching those films. And I had always just assumed like that meant like, you know, The Conjuring or some like very clearly a film that features like satanic elements.
The Exorcist
is what I always assumed. But when they were like, Thor, I'm like, wait, what? Like this too? You know, this too? This is a problem? And so, yes, as soon as those things were taken away from me, I began to realize that without them, all I had was being a Jehovah's Witness. And that was the realization that those things were my escape from this horrible place. They had been balancing it out for me. It was like a balance. I did not enjoy going to the meeting anymore. I did not enjoy going out in service anymore. But the art of filmmaking, writing, you know, drawing, I like to draw, watching movies, talking about movies, all that was like on the other end of the seesaw and it was keeping it level. But as soon as all that was removed, it just went plop. And all I had was being a Jehovah's Witness. And I realized this sucks. I hate this.
Plus the hypocrisy behind the whole Thor thing, like the brother not stepping up. Like Ruben and I talked about this. We found that petty as fuck.
I had been to movies with him before. I had been to movies, and I'm really good friends with his daughter now, who left. But he's still there. He's not an elder anymore, though. But was anyway,
Thor, did they find out that you watched Thor?
Yeah. Excuse me. I heard that you were watching the Owls of Gahool, and I must say that you are now officially not an elder. No, like
it sounds too much like Ghoul.
Exactly.
You're gonna make somebody stumble.
Like I went to his house a few times and I saw like the movies he owned. He had the Star Wars movies, the Rocky movies, you know, and I went to see Rocky Balboa with him when it came out. You know, I mean, he liked movies. He was from Chicago. He would often talk about his worldly days and knife fights and all kinds of shit. He was a big burly dude who, you know, he was abrasive. He was an abrasive person. And honestly, he was a bit of a breath of fresh air when I was there because he wasn't like other elders. He seemed kind of like a regular guy. But the second he was sitting there not being able to admit that he had seen the movie too, I went, Mal, you're weak. You're weak, man. You're not supporting me. Mm-hmm. And you're afraid of discipline just as much as me.
I'm surprised you didn't just say that. I mean, being there, but I mean, I can understand why you didn't. I wish I had.
But I was afraid of being disfellowshipped.
But it just seems so, like Joe said, petty. And it's like a witch hunt. It doesn't sound like something that I've ever been to the elders for. I mean, I've been to the elders for too much partying, but never like you're watching superhero movies. I mean,
I think it was because I was gaining success on the internet.
It's always the optics with Jehovah's Witnesses. If you're damaging the optics, then you're in trouble. Have you heard anything yet from family, your congregation, or the elders, or anybody about the video?
Since posting the video, I have not had a text or phone call from my family. I don't know. One of the things I didn't talk about that I've thought about a lot over the years is that all of the things that those elders told me the last couple of years I was there, concerns they had, things they were worried about, the movies, the clothing, all that stuff. Seeing that video, they're going to go, see, we were right.
Mm.
And I hate that. I hate that. I hate that that is their confirmation. See, we knew that he was a problem. Look at what he's doing now. Isn't that sad? You know, that's what they're going to say. They're not going to actually see anything that could have been changed, that should have been changed. They're just going to get confirmation that, yep, it's right that we marked him or whatever, you know?
But the game is rigged. I mean, it's rigged that way. Unfortunately, as soon as we open our mouth, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. Before we get to the last question, Chris, I wanted to say something to you.
Sure.
Thank you for coming out as pansexual.
Sure. You're welcome.
really appreciate it. I did the same thing October of last year, or I think the year before.
I think it was two years ago.
It was 2 years ago. I did it for the same reasons that you did. The opportunity to show all these people that I've been helping for years that this is okay to say publicly.
Yeah.
And I refer myself to as bisexual, but it's technically pansexual. I say sometimes bisexual/pansexual, but it's I'm right there with you. And yeah. it's really appreciated. And I know that people in the LGBTQ community also appreciates it. So
yeah, I felt very good about that to see so many people going like, thank you for saying that, but knowing people personally who were afraid to talk about that kind of stuff and being in the Kingdom Hall knowing and not being able to say anything about it. I've seen that do real damage to people, real lasting psychological damage to people. You know, people think that it's not like that. It is. It fucks with your mind, and it takes a long time to heal from that.
I saw your post in the group, in the LGBTQ acceptance group. So definitely it's a common factor.
Yeah.
Do you have a message for any of the Jehovah's Witnesses out there that are physically in but mentally out about your experience leaving?
Yeah, what I'll say is that everyone's situation for why they want to leave is going to be different. You know, some people might have different reasons. Some people are abused. Some people are just mentally abused and they just can't take it anymore. But for others, it's completely different and they feel like they're in real danger. And everyone has a different reason for wanting to leave. But I think the commonality is that a lot of folks want to leave and they don't know how. So for me, one of the biggest reasons that I was so terrified of leaving was the consequences of losing connections with friends and family. And I won't sugarcoat it. It's terrible. It sucks. And there's a long period after leaving that you will feel pretty bad about that. But I can also tell you that with enough distance, you will eventually realize that life is better and that there are other people who are going to take you up and are going to appreciate you, actually you. And they're not going to say to you, maybe you shouldn't be doing these things that you love that are normal. And they're going to support you and they're going to appreciate you. And with time, that situation is going to be a lot better. Although the issues are probably never going to fully disappear, especially if you have family who stays. But it is better on the outside. Trust me, that the air is cleaner on the outside.
With that being said, thanks for coming on and speaking to us, Chris.
Of course, we really appreciate it. It was great to talk to you guys.
I feel this episode is going to help a lot because I know a lot of people were watching your videos and didn't know you were a Jehovah's Witness once.
Yeah, Chris, I have a lot of ex-Jehovah's Witness friends. And when that video started being shared, they're like, I've been listening to him for years. And they're like, whoa, they're just blown away and excited.
I'm happy that it's helping. I really am. That's the only reason I made the video. I wanted to help.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Nobody Asked Us to Do This, the Next Jehovah's Witness podcast. Remember, our stories may be varied, but you are not alone. Take off that new personality and create your own. Have a great one.